Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Condensed Histories, the podcast that takes pop culture and reveals the real history underneath. I'm your host, Jem Deducci, and what we're doing this time round is the 1971 classic Dirty Harry.
I know what you're thinking.
Which means we will, of course, be talking about law enforcement. I'll be talking a little bit about the background of this podcast, and we'll be doing a deep dive into this film and how it's a symbol of how tastes change. There's a lot to unpack here, but the place I'm going to start is going way back over the Christmas period. Isn't it a weird period, particularly in Britain, where we have the day after Christmas, Boxing Day off, and then you've got the lead up to New Year's and nobody really goes into work for that. So there's this sort of dead zone around that period for about 10 days. And the joke is, and it's not just our family who says it, which is on something like December 28th, it's just impossible to know what day of the week it is because there is no normal point of reference. Everyone is getting up at 10 o'clock in the morning, sitting around in their pajamas, drinking wine or whatever. That's fine. That's acceptable if it's a Tuesday and it's December 27th. If you're still doing that on January 27th, you have a problem. You might need to go and talk to somebody about that. In amongst all of this mess and slovenliness, etc., it's a time to watch movies and things like that. And I had got sick of the... I don't know about you, but familiarity breeds contempt when it comes to movies for me. I have watched some movies over and over again, but when I look at it, I watch them over and over again as a kid. I think kids love watching the same movie over and over again. I can watch a movie, think it's the best movie ever, then I might watch it once again when it comes out in home video to almost like double check it. Was that as good as I thought it was? Yeah, yes, it was. Okay, fine. And then not have to watch it again for another 3-4 years. I'm okay with that. My kids absolutely love at Christmas time to overindulge on the Lord of the Rings movies, etc. But because it's such a weird blur time, it's a time when Greg and I take off on the podcast. And a lot of the other podcasts do the same thing. So I'm puttering around and I need to listen to something. And so what I end up doing is going back and listening to a lot of the previous episodes of this podcast because I want to make sure I'm getting better. And I notice that I repeat myself at times. I hope you indulge that. Well, I mean, if you're still listening, I guess you do. But I do my best to come up with fresh things. But I noticed that about 2 years ago now, I did an episode on Cops. It's just called Cops. And Dirty Harry got about 3-4 minutes in it. So this is obviously going to be an expansion of that. I am not going to start talking about sheriffs again and how there's two different types of sheriffs, a medieval one in England, and then obviously the Wild West cowboy version. If you want to know more about that, go listen to that episode. I would thoroughly recommend you do it. I will be telling you a bit more about police officers and law enforcement. The goal here is to expand on something I have talked about before, but it's not just a flat repeat either. The point of the Cops episode is we are absolutely obsessed with police officers as a form of entertainment, a bit of pop culture. Only if we're talking about the medical profession do you get another job that is even close to getting the same amount of interest from the general population. You certainly don't get a lot of... Yes, of course, there are some reality shows about baking, but there aren't a lot of TV shows about baking and cooking. You know, for every bear, there are literally 10 police officer TV shows. So sometimes they could be movies and they're big action films. I'm looking at you, Die Hard. Or they could be more TV procedurals. I'm looking at you, NYPD Blue. There's Law and Order, etc. And of course, when we talk about police, even though every country nowadays does have law enforcement in whatever form or shape it has, it is, like everything in pop culture, America which we tend to look to. And there will be some conversations about interesting variations, particularly with Britain, in a bit. But first of all, let's go back to Dirty Harry, which I wanted to show the kids because I knew it was very much of its time. It's one of those films I watched a lot when I was growing up as a teenager, and I remember how thrilling it was. But of course, it is over 50 years old.
I know what you're thinking.
How thrilling is it to the generation who have grown up on things like Avengers Endgame? Dirty Harry, by comparison, is going to be very pared down. And it was almost a fascinating psychological experiment because I had my two boys, both teenagers, both absolutely old enough to see Dirty Harry, and my wife sitting there. And if you do not remember, there will be spoilers for Dirty Harry. You've had over 50 years to see it. And what I'm hoping is either you haven't seen it or it's been a long time since you've seen it.
Well, to tell you the truth, in all this excitement, I've kind of lost track myself.
This will make you go, I think I need to go back and experience that again. Because the opening of it is you see a man coming out onto a rooftop, assembling a silenced sniper's rifle, and then you see a woman in one of those really cool rooftop swimming pools, and he shoots her. And they're clearly hundreds of meters away from each other. She is posing no threat. She's just swimming around. Why has he done this? And it turns out he's a serial killer who has just... He's a crazy guy. He just wants to wreak havoc on San Francisco. And that's a good way to get people's attention. But the bit that made me chuckle and where I paused the movie is he then writes a letter to the police force that says,
if I do not hear from you, it will be my next pleasure to kill a Catholic priest or a...
Incredibly derogatory word for an African-American. And my wife, when... Because it's actually written down. You see the letter. And even then in 1971, the police officer does not read it out, just sort of coughs and looks shifty. But my wife was like, oh my God. And I paused it and went, you've just seen him gun down an innocent woman, but you're now offended at his racism? What, you thought he had a point up until he revealed that he was a racist? No, it turns out that not only is he a serial killer, he's a racist serial killer. Now, that's not good. We can all agree racism is extremely bad and nobody should be using that word, but it's not the worst thing he's already done. And that was the bit that triggered my brain going, I need to do a podcast about this. Because as we went along in the movie, the phrase, it's of its time, is used to defend all kinds of hokey stuff from the past. But this really is of its time. It simply wouldn't be made today. And I'm going to come into the problems of copaganda, which is, I don't know who invented that phrase, but bravo, oh bravo you. But we can talk about copaganda later. But clearly, I've just said, this film is over 50 years old. It is more than half a century old. And surprise, surprise, society's moved on a bit. If I was to rewind a little over 50 years, so hang on, what is it? Let's work it out. It is 53 years old. So in 1971, if I was to rewind 53 years, we are literally in World War One. That's how far away World War One is to Dirty Harry, which Dirty Harry is to us today. And I think it's safe to say that Clint Eastwood, who wasn't even born when World War One was happening, he would have looked back at some of the ideas there and thought them ridiculous and society was problematic. And so this is the thing. When people want to say, I don't agree with this stuff today, therefore we should sweep it under the carpet. We should edit books and things like that. I have a problem with that. Now, if the book is aimed at children and various views have moved forward and the whole of society or the vast majority of society agree, then I think we need to move along with that then. For example, Enid Blyton is really quite casually racist. So it doesn't destroy the stories, the very twee stories, if you change a little bit of the language. They're still a bit sexist, but I think that 8-year-olds can deal with it. And indeed, the point is when they turn around to George, who is a girl, and they're saying, you can't do it. The point is George gets on with it and George is pretty good. So that gives the 8-year-old girls a feeling of like, yeah, I can do anything I want. Enid Blyton was, of course, a girl anyway. So anyway, enough of Enid Blyton. I don't know how I managed to get on from that and Dirty Harry. So if you're not aware, in screenwriting today, there is this concept of the Bechdel's test. And when I first heard about it, it was before I'd written any of my historical novels. And I've always made sure that all of my works, not historical works, but my fiction writing, my historical works, pass the Bechdel test. What is it? The three points are, is there more than one named female character? Do they talk to each other? And do they talk to each other about things other than men and their relationships with men? If they do all three, then congratulations, you passed the Bechdel test. And Dirty Harry absolutely does not pass the Bechdel test. I was paid attention to this. The first adult female speaking part is about 2/3 of the way into the movie. And what happens is Harry has a partner. His partner is wounded in the line of duty and he's there with his wife, and Harry walks down with the wife and they're discussing, the partner's thinking about leaving after this injury. He says, I don't blame you, this isn't a life for anybody. And then you also find out through the conversation that Harry's wife has passed away through a drunk driver a few years ago. So it's a good bit of background character. The scene itself is fine, it hasn't aged badly, but the rest of the film is like, are any women ever going to say anything? And this wife, and indeed she is not named, all you know is she is the partner's wife. And then later on, the bad guy, that serial killer, that racist serial killer I was talking to you about, he manages to take over a bus, a school bus full of kids and a female bus driver. And she largely goes, oh, will you not think of the children? Ah, which is all understandable. And by the way, my acting there, you're welcome. But understandably, she's pretty stressed out about the situation. And technically, the little girls are singing at the same time, but none of these people have a name to them. They're not interacting with each other, but it is a great scene. Again, it's appropriate in the situation. Of course, you'd be freaked out if a mad serial killer was threatening children and had a gun in your ribs and saying, keep driving. All that stuff works fine. That isn't of its time, but today you'd have some more women in the movie. Maybe the police chief was a woman. Maybe a woman of colour, because then you get a two for one. Maybe you find out that she's gay. Then it's 3 for 1, or all in that price. Dirty Harry himself is homophobic and racist, although they point out he hates everybody. His racism is equal opportunities. He just doesn't like other humans, which obviously makes him perfect as a police officer with that kind sensitivity that we're all looking for. And so all the police officers, well, not quite all, but all the talking roles are, in essence, white guys. And there are, we're talking about San Francisco in 1971. So there are members of the gay community shown very poorly. Very, very, very poorly. There is no way that Greg could put in any of the dialogue around them. We would get cancelled immediately. There are a number of women in this movie that seem to have forgotten to put on their clothing. And it's just, in every possible way, it does not appeal to modern sensibilities about diversity, LGBT rights, women's rights, everything. And yet, this is such an influential movie. Because had there been films about the police before Dirty Harry? Absolutely. But the standard formula of a police TV show before Dirty Harry, or movie, was the cops are the good guys. They're incorruptible. They're right. They're tough. They're hardworking. They're honest. And Dirty Harry leads to some interesting questions. Again, going back to my family, and this is where we get into the dangerous side of propaganda around police officers. I said to my youngest, I went, the interesting thing about this movie is, do you think the ends justify the means? Is Dirty Harry a good police officer or not? We can all agree he's a terrible human being, but is he doing the right thing? And of course, the reality is that Dirty Harry breaks a whole load of laws. But this movie, directed by Don Siegel, and starring Clint Eastwood, is a masterclass in, okay, I'm going to sound like a university lecturer here, in right-wing fascist propaganda. Now, I think it's valid on this occasion. The critical scene that had my family baying for blood, for the blood of this serial killer, is the serial killer has managed to capture a 14-year-old girl, put her in a shallow grave, and now Dirty Harry has to be chased around to give him some money, and then he will let the girl go. And surprise, surprise, there's a double cross, and the bad guy gets away. Harry manages to work out where he is, manages to catch up with him. And obviously, he's running out of time because he needs to get this 14-year-old girl out of her shallow grave. So what he does is he finds out that the serial killer is actually staying in the nearby football stadium. He has a little shack there. And so they do not have a warrant to get in. They do not have probable cause, because probable cause means you are seeing a crime committed on a site. It's all pitch black. He has been told by a doctor that he recalls that the guy might possibly be living on that. That is not enough to either get a warrant, nor is there probable cause there. But Harry's on a mission because he needs to save the girl. And so he breaks in. Breaking and entering is not allowed by police officers. And it also means that every bit of evidence that they now collect is not admissible as evidence because it was collected illegally. Harry manages to catch up with the guy who has been wounded by Harry. And Harry proceeds to grind the heel of his boot into the wound on this guy's leg in one of the most amazing movie shots ever. It's really quite close. It's an overhead shot of Harry sort of grinding this guy into the ground almost. And the shot just pulls out and out and out and out until they're tiny little specks in the middle of the football pitch with the football field, I believe the Americans call it. And I don't know how they did that shot. It is an amazing shot. Could they have done it in reverse, zoomed in with a helicopter? I don't know. It is an amazingly slick, hell of a pullout. And it shows you the skill of Don Siegel. But what you've got there is a police officer torturing a man. You know the whole thing about innocent until proven guilty? That's there for a reason. And Dirty Harry has just broken all of the rules. Of course, they got all the stuff that ties the guy to the case. But of course, they can't use any of it, and Harry is now out to get him by any means necessary, and the girl is recovered, but she's recovered dead. Naked and dead. They clearly state that she's 14. Again, modern day, no way. I've no idea how old the actress was, but no. So there's all this kind of creepy stuff going on as well, particularly with women. So I've told you the basic story, that there's this serial killer threatening San Francisco. This is based on a real bit of history. The Zodiac Killer, or Scorpio, as he's known here. Scorpio, this killer in the movie, is based on the Zodiac Killer in real life. There is a very good movie, a David Fincher film, called Zodiac, which goes through the situation very well. Spoiler alert for that movie. And reality, says Jeb with a question mark, is they never catch Zodiac. So it's an interesting one that with the Dirty Harry, they're already doing a power fantasy that the police were able to capture the guy. But this was made at the time when everybody was still worried in San Francisco about the Zodiac Killer. And we know that he fantasized or threatened to take over a school bus full of school children. And so therefore, to have that as the crescendo, the climax of the Dirty Harry movie, is again a fascist fantasy of saying, well, if the cop breaks all the laws, he will even be able to save this thing that didn't even happen in real life. So this stuff to me is absolutely fascinating. But while he was breaking all those laws and that man was lying on the ground screaming, that's what he was doing, I had my darling, highly sensitive wife and my two children all basically screaming, get him, just do him. And it's like, really? Really? No law and order whatsoever. Vigilante justice is what we're going for, eh? But it shows you the power of the film, because at that point, all the liberal sense.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The abilities of the family had evaporated because the film had set it up that way. Let's talk about how influential this movie is in terms of pop culture, shall we? The idea, as I said, of this cop that breaks the rules, that goes sometimes too far, that doesn't listen to his superiors, doesn't just take orders passively, that was invented by Dirty Harry. Of course, there is the really famous, not opening line, but the way they introduce Harry, one of the first things you hear him say is the super famous speech of, in all of the confusion, did I fire 6 shots or only 5?
I know what you're thinking. Did he fire 6 shots or only 5? Well, to tell you the truth, in all this excitement, I've kind of lost track myself. But being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
What you may not be aware of is, in screenwriting, there is this idea of mirroring or going on an arc. So sometimes some of the things early on in the movie are repeated at the end of the film, either ironically or to show you that we've now reached the happily ever after or what have you. But in the case of that famous speech, it is said again at the end of the movie. And so the outcomes are different, and it therefore wraps everything quite nicely together. The other thing about this film is a lot of it was filmed at nighttime on the streets of San Francisco. It gives it a really gritty, naturalistic feel. A lot of films from the 60s and 70s are shot on sound stages, and you can tell, and that stuff hasn't aged particularly well. But with this, and what I said at the time, it's like, wow, these nighttime scenes are pitch black. You can barely see the figures. You know, like real nighttime is. If I was going to have one criticism of Nolan's Batman films, and believe me, I love them. Nolan is one of the greatest directors ever of all time. But, of course, you need to see what's going on. And nowadays, in modern cinema, there's a lot of lighting just off camera so you can actually see what's going on, which, obviously, being able to see things is good, don't get me wrong. But it does remind you how intimidating nighttime can actually be. You've got the idea of Harry having this incredibly powerful weapon. The fetishization of guns is, it doesn't so much start here, but this is one of the times when it's been brought up to the modern day, where people started buying those guns. And if you want to see a movie that's really beholden to it, it's Lethal Weapon, because Martin Riggs has a whole conversation about his Beretta 9mm in Lethal Weapon, and makes a comment that Murtaugh's IS-6 shooter, a lot of old-timers have those. So there's a conversation about guns there. But the other critical thing, to show you how Dirty Harry just gets on with it, is he's called to a place where there is somebody who is threatening to jump off a building. So Harry goes up on a cherry picker and then punches the guy and knocks him out and then brings him down safely. Lethal Weapon, again, and that tells you something about the character, that he's just willing to do whatever it takes to get the job done. But he does actually want to do a good job. Same thing with Martin Riggs when it comes to Lethal Weapon, although they do it a different way round in that situation. There is a lot of Lethal Weapon which was made 15, 16 years later from this earlier movie. Then, as I mentioned, there's the classic scene of the killer bouncing Harry around the town to check that he isn't being covered by police officers. That is being used as recently, well, it's being used in so many different things. With the advent of mobile phones, cell phones, that's just not a thing anymore. But it was used highly effectively in the third Die Hard movie, Die Hard with a Vengeance, I think it was called. And so we are now fast-forwarding 25 years from the original Dirty Harry, and yet it's still a trope being used. The idea of this tough, uncompromising cop is Judge Dredd, about 5 or 6 years before Judge Dredd was actually created. The real genius of this was the casting of Andy Robinson, now known as Andrew Robinson, as the killer. Now, he'd been on one episode of one TV show prior to this movie. He was plucked out of obscurity to play one of the most memorable, creepy villains in film history. He's up there with Hannibal Lecter. Don't believe me? Watch the film. Very different to Hannibal Lecter. But the reality is that Andy Robinson is a lovely guy. He is a pacifist. He is a vegetarian. He is not looking to cause any trouble whatsoever. Apparently, he had to go through quite a lot of training to fire a gun without blinking and wincing. That just wasn't his thing. But he plays a super creepy, racist serial killer so well in this movie that he is quite often in the future made to play creepy, weird villains. Most notably, if you've seen the original Hellraiser, he plays the lovely father. But the key thing is, the lovely father gets possessed by an evil spirit, and he then becomes a super creepy bad guy again. That is 22, 23 years. Oh, sorry, no, sorry, it's in the 80s. 12, 13 years later, still playing back to it. This film echoes down. Of course, there are multiple sequels, all of them inferior to the original Dirty Harry. The whole thing about Go Ahead, Make My Day doesn't come from Dirty Harry. It's from one of the sequels.
Go ahead, make my day.
As I made passing reference in the Cops episode, the very last one was in 1989. And it did very well at the box office because it had the trailer, the first trailer for the 1989 Batman film, which everybody wanted to see. And allegedly people were going to see. The Deadpool was the last one, which weirdly they use Guns N' Roses music in it. Very hot in 1989, good choice. but the alleged singer of Guns N' Roses, well, they weren't called Guns N' Roses, but this rock band that was happening to play Guns N' Roses music, is a young Jim Carrey not being funny. So it absolutely is this cross-section between old Hollywood and new Hollywood. Eastwood ended up playing the same character off and on for 17, 18 years. And yet he was doing lots of other things as well. The interesting thing about Eastwood, of course, is nowadays, do we talk to him about being an actor or do we talk about him being a director? Now, this was actually directed, as I said, by Don Siegel. But what was interesting is the first time Clint Eastwood wins an Oscar for Best Director is for Unforgiven. And at the end of Unforgiven, it says for Sergio and Don. And that's his shout out to Sergio Leone and Don Siegel, who, in his opinion, were the two directors he learned most from. And yet the irony is, neither of them ever won a Best Director Oscar, and yet Clint Eastwood did, and has been nominated multiple times since, and is in his 90s with movies still coming out. It's amazing. Clint Eastwood's career is absolutely stunning. Now, of course, he is a Republican. He is right-wing. But he is from that generation of right-wing people that aren't also insane. And this is the thing. If you want to sort of say that only one party has all the solutions, I hate to break it to you, you're wrong. As I've said before, you go too far left, you end up with Stalin. You go too far right, you end up with Hitler. So the solution is somewhere in the middle. And maybe if you're in the center, you might grab something that's a little bit left-wing and then grab something that's a little bit right-wing. And whereas there's no doubt that Dirty Harry is very right-wing, the idea of the police protecting you is something that is pretty hard not to be attractive. Now, obviously, when it comes to people of color and since 2020, and you've got the likes of Rayshard Brooks and George Floyd and things like that, you know, this is all on video, on the record. We can see the problem when police don't follow procedures. We can see the problem of racist police officers. In the real world, this stuff isn't fun or funny at all. The reality is, with Dirty Harry's biases, he's more likely to shoot first and ask questions later. My wife made the comment that the bank robbers, where he does the famous speech about did I fire six shots or only five, all the bank robbers are black. In the modern day, that would be a mixed race gang. And yet, it is on record that there have been all black crews of bank robbers and all white crews of bank robbers. But in the modern world, it is unacceptable to show one group only. Because there aren't a whole bunch of black police officers with Dirty Harry, it does look a little bit white versus black in this movie. Again, something that just wouldn't happen today. But going to the history side of things, again, I go into this a bit when it comes to the episode on cops. Copaganda is this idea that there are all these shows that show that even when the police are breaking the laws, they're doing it for all the best intentions, whereas we've got plenty of evidence in the real world that ain't true, but we've all been programmed to it. How many movies have you seen where the cop has to hand in their badge and gun before they can properly solve the case? It could be something as gritty and well-regarded as Mayor of Easttown as Lethal Weapon. The last scene, interestingly, in Dirty Harry's, once Dirty Harry has saved the day, he then throws his badge into the water. But only then does he, in essence, hand in his badge and gun. Even in that movie, that would have been a step too far. But that would be evolved by other movies later on down the line. But we do want our police to be regulated because it's their job to make sure that the laws are enforced, not to be interpreted. Got a fun thing for you now. Before I go into why we have a real police force, here is something from my book, Forgotten Histories, Unbelievable Moments from the Past. It's a collection of lots of weird and wonderful facts from all eras, all countries in the world. There's nearly 200 of them, and this is about halfway through. And this is an example about why we need a police force. And the first official paid police force, this is where I went onto Wikipedia and I wonder what they got there. And of course, what they point out is their various militias and constables and things like that, watches. Sometimes the military, it was their job to keep the peace. Could be ancient China, Egypt, Persia, Rome, etc. Yeah, all those are true. But the first time we've got what we can call a modern police force was founded by Robert Peel in 1830 in Britain. This is unsurprising because Britain was the first industrialized country, so it's the first time when they get a much larger urban environment. All this kind of stuff, not surprising. But let's go before 1830, and you'll see why we might need a police force. This is Jonathan Wild was a criminal mastermind. Born in London during the time of Charles II, Wild came into his own in 1713 when he became, on the surface of things, a kind of chief investigator of crimes, what we might now call a police inspector. However, Wild's official identity cloaked a genius scam. Under the self-created title and cover of Thief Taker General, he ran a gang of thieves, kept the stolen goods, and waited for the crimes to be announced in the newspapers. When the crime became public, Wild would claim that his thief-taking agents had found the stolen goods and would return them to the owners for a reward to cover the expenses he had incurred, he said. He was, in essence, selling people's property back to them. In some cases, if the stolen items or circumstances allowed for blackmail, he did not wait for the theft to be announced, but used a third party to do a little blackmailing. As well as recovering stolen goods, he offered the police assistance in finding the thieves that Wild would help to discover were rivals or members of his own gang he had no further use for. Wild controlled the underworld, made a fortune, and appeared completely legitimate. You have to admire his audacity, if not his morals. For a time, Wild virtually monopolized crime in London. In public, by contrast, he presented a heroic face. In 1718, he gave himself a thoroughly earned promotion and the title Thief Taker General of Great Britain and Ireland. But Wild was not just a thief. There was a deeply sinister side to all of this, and his testimony sent over 60 thieves to the gallows. Wild made even more money by offering to help find criminals for an extra fee, which in reality was more cash for the same job. By 1720, Wild's fame was such that the Privy Council, that's the King's inner circle of advisers, consulted with him on methods of controlling crime. His predictable recommendation was that the rewards for evidence against thieves should be raised. He, of course, profited further from the now larger rewards. By 1725, the mood in London was changing, and Wild's luck was running out. On 15th of February, Wild was arrested for helping one of his men in a jailbreak. He was sent to Newgate Prison, where he tried to continue to run his business. No longer a pillar of the community, Wild's schemes unraveled, and his days of criminal activity came to an end as gang members testified against him. There was no way out, and on the 24th of May, 1725, he was hanged. So, there we go. Fun little thing there. Now, I did mention police there because there's a whole other article about police force, but what I meant was law enforcement. And this is the thing. Prior to 1830, it was always people's part of their job. For example, the lawyers, their jobs was to be solicitors rather than to catch the criminals. Or in the case of the soldiers, their jobs were to be soldiers. They were a military unit unless it was peacetime, in which case they would patrol the streets to stop general crime. Somebody like theft or murder. If they caught people in the act, they would take them and throw them in a prison or something like that. You could go to debtor's prison. If you fail to pay your debts, you could be thrown into prison. All these weird exceptions or weird ways of carrying out justice. But it was Robert Peel in 1830 that thought that an actually paid force, where their only job was not only to run down streets trying to capture people, but also to investigate crimes. This is something that really didn't happen prior to it, be it the watch or the posses or whatever you want to call them out there over the whole of history, across the whole of the globe. It was in Britain where specifically a crime had happened. And it wasn't a case of, oh, bad luck, mate. It's a case of, okay, well, are there any witnesses? Maybe we'll get some witness statements. So everybody said it was the red-haired man who did it. Oh, and there seems to be a rather shifty red-haired man over there. You're nicked, son. So that was the basic principles. You get to the times of, for example, Jack the Ripper. And you have the police trying to investigate these crimes, And they didn't have the forensic evidence of the day. I've always liked the fact that there was this theory that your eyes would reflect the last thing you actually saw. So they took photos of the victim's eyes. And funnily enough, that's not a thing. So they didn't have a reflection of the killer in them. But if you fast forward from 1880s London to 1960s San Francisco, and we've got the Zodiac Killer, largely active in 1968, 1969, but it wasn't clear. There are 5 guaranteed deaths. 2 people were also injured. The killer himself claimed 37 in total. There are theories that it could have been 20 or more. But this stuff was still fresh in people's minds when Dirty Harry came out. And of course, the person was never caught. And now that it's over 50 years, the person who had done it has clearly passed away. And when you link all of this stuff together, that series of crimes is considered the most famous unsolved crime spree in American history. And its own slant of it, the right-wing slant of it, is there for everybody to watch in Dirty Harry. It is, like I say, an extraordinarily effective movie. I don't care how liberal or left-leaning you might be, this film is just designed for you to go, well, hang on. This man needs to break the laws. The laws are holding him back for him to get to save the day. And like I say, if they'd written Harry slightly differently, they even knew in the 1970s, if they just made him an outright bigot, then nobody would cheer him. So to just make him, in essence, a grumpy old man, well, not old. The other thing that's worth pointing out is Clint Eastwood looks effortlessly cool, particularly when he puts on his shades. You just see him and think, yeah, he's, even though that is a terrible plaid tweed coat type thing, jacket thing, his outfits, this is 1971, for heaven's sakes, this is not a good era for fashion. Only Clint Eastwood can pull it off and make it look awesome. And the other awesome thing about it is its soundtrack. It's so funky. It's got some great gravelly guitars. It's got some great jazz flute. It's got that classic thing of women sort of like going, ha, la, 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 that kind of thing. It's creepy, but it's also funky and it's street. And all of this means that Dirty Harry may be of its time and would absolutely be cancelled today. And with no context, a modern person might be sitting there in shock at this film. It's like, he's the good guy, but he's broken all of the rules of contemporary society. It wasn't contemporary society. But it is still a really good cop thriller. That's it from me, and as always, another episode coming soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.